Hello, a brief comment before we start. Of the four documents included as supplementals to this episode, this one was the most important and yet the most difficult to translate. Lenin opens the text with a frank admission of not having had enough time to properly prepare his remarks. Given that all other writings of his I've ever come across have been detailed and deliberate, I must believe that time was indeed a factor for him here, since the original text is at times muddled and vague. Please keep in mind that in many places I was forced to abandon my usual strictness in regards to the original text. I have chosen to rephrase the original Russian so as to create a translation which more adheres to the rather rigid rules of English syntax. However, there are still one or two brief instances where the original text is so vague that I was not comfortable guessing what Lenin meant, and so I erred back on the side of my usual strictness. These moments will likely stick out to you, but I have tried as best I can to minimize them and translate both the letter and the spirit of Lenin's theses into English. I hope you will say that I have succeeded. Episode 6, Supplemental C, The Tasks of the Proletariat in the Current Revolution. Having arrived in Petrograd only on the night of the 3rd of April, I could, of course, speak at the meeting on the 4th of April with a report on the tasks of the revolutionary proletariat only in my own name and with stipulations regarding insufficient preparation. The only thing that I could do to ease the work for myself and for good faith opponents was the preparation of written theses. I read them and transmitted their text to Comrade Tseretelli. I read them very slowly and twice, first at a meeting of Bolsheviks, then at a meeting of Bolsheviks and Mensheviks. I print these, my personal theses, provided with only the briefest illustrative notes, and which were developed in significantly more detail in the report. Theses. 1. In our attitude to the war, which from the point of view of Russia and under the new government of Lvov remains unconditionally a predatory imperialist war by virtue of the capitalist character of this government, even the tiniest concessions to revolutionary defensism are unacceptable. A conscious proletariat can give its consent to a revolutionary war, one which truly justifies revolutionary defensism, only under the conditions of A. the transfer of power into the hands of the proletariat and the poor sections of the peasantry which have joined them, B. the rejection of all annexations in deed, not in words, C. a total break in deed with all the interests of capital. In view of the doubtless good faith of wide sections of mass representatives of revolutionary defensism, who support the war only out of necessity and not for conquest, in view of their deception by the bourgeoisie, it is necessary to explain to them their mistake in particular detail, persistently and patiently, to explain the unbreakable connection of capital with the imperialist war, to demonstrate that it is not possible to end the war with a truly democratic and nonviolent peace without the overthrow of capital. The widest propagation of this view should be organized in the active army. Fraternization. 2. The uniqueness of the current moment in Russia lies in the transition from the first stage of the revolution, which gave power to the bourgeoisie by virtue of the insufficient consciousness and organization of the proletariat, to its second stage, which must give power into the hands of the proletariat and the poorest sections of the peasantry. This transition is characterized, on the one hand, by the height of legality. Russia is now the most free country in the world of all the warring countries. And on the other hand, by the absence of violence toward the masses, and finally, by their trusting and unconscious attitude toward the government of the capitalists, the worst enemies of peace and socialism. This uniqueness requires from us the ability to adapt to the special conditions of party work in an environment of unheard-of wide masses of the proletariat, who have only now awakened to political life. 3. There can be no support for the provisional government, and an explanation must be made of the complete falsehood of its promises, particularly regarding the renunciation of annexations. there should be exposure instead of the unacceptable illusion-seeding demand that this government, a government of capitalists, cease to be imperialist. 4. The fact must be admitted that in the majority of Soviets of workers' deputies, our party is in the minority, and for now in a weak minority, before a bloc of all the petty bourgeois opportunistic elements, from populist socialists and the socialist revolutionaries to the organizational committee, Chechidze, Tseretelli, etc., Stelkov, etc., etc., who have given in to the influence of the bourgeoisie and are carrying out its influence on the proletariat. It must be explained to the masses that Soviets of workers' deputies are the only possible form of revolutionary government, and therefore our task, so long as this government gives in to the influence of the bourgeoisie, can only be the patient, systematic, persistent explanation adapted specifically to the practical needs of the masses, of the mistakes of their tactics. So long as we are in the minority, we perform the work of criticism and explanation of mistakes, while proclaiming at the same time the necessity of the transfer of all state power to the Soviets of workers' deputies, in order that the masses will, through experience, be spared those mistakes. 5. There must not be a parliamentary republic. A return to it from the Soviets of workers' deputies would be a step backward, but a republic of Soviets of workers, farmers, and peasants' deputies across the entire country, from bottom to top. The police, army, and bureaucratic rule should be removed. First footnote, that is, the standing army should be replaced with the general arming of the people. Under the condition of their election to office and ability to be replaced at any time, the salaries for all bureaucrats should not exceed the average salary of a good worker. 6. In the agrarian program, there must be a transfer of the center of gravity to Soviets of farmers' deputies. All landlord holdings are to be confiscated. All lands in the country should be nationalized, and local Soviets of farmers and peasants' deputies should be in control of the land. Soviets of deputies from the poorest peasants should be allotted. Model farms under the control of farmers' deputies should be created at public expense from each large holding, with a size of about 100 to 300 desiatins, according to local and other conditions and according to the determination of local institutions. 7. Merge immediately all banks in the country into one national bank, with the introduction of control over it on the part of a Soviet of workers' deputies. 8. The introduction of socialism is not our immediate task, but the transition at once to control on the part of the Soviets of workers' deputies over national production and the distribution of goods. 9. Party tasks are A. An immediate party congress. B. A change in the party program, mainly 1. On imperialism and the imperialist war. 2. On the attitude toward the state and our demand for a state commune. Second footnote, that is, for the kind of state of which the Paris Commune gave a prototype. 3. The correction of the outdated minimum program. And C. A change of the party name. Third footnote, instead of social democracy, whose official leaders around the world betrayed socialism by going over to the bourgeoisie, the defensists and the indecisive Kautskyists, we must be called the Communist Party. 10. The international must be revived. The creation of a revolutionary international and international against social chauvinists and the center should be initiated. Fourth footnote. The tendency in international and social democracy which vacillates between the chauvinists, the defensists, and the internationalists is called the center, namely, Kautsky and Company in Germany, Long and Company in France, Chechidze and Company in Russia, Turati and Company in Italy, MacDonald and Company in England, and so on. So that the reader understands why I had to underscore in particular, as a rare exception, an instance of good faith opponents, I invite him to compare with these theses the following objection of Mr. Goldenberg. quote, "The banner of civil war has been hoisted by Lenin in the midst of revolutionary democracy." Cited in Mr. Plekhanov's Unity, issue number 5. A pearl, is it not? I write, read, and parse, in view of the doubtless good faith of wide sections of mass representatives of revolutionary defensism, in view of their deception by the bourgeoisie, it is necessary to explain to them their mistake in particular detail, persistently and patiently. But the gentlemen of the bourgeoisie, calling themselves social democrats, belonging neither to the wide sections nor to mass representatives of defensism, with a straight face present my views, and state them thus. The banner of civil war. There was not a word about that in the theses. There was not a word in the report. Has been hoisted in the midst of revolutionary democracy. What is this? How does this differ from pogromist agitation? From Russian will? I read, write, and parse. Soviets of workers' deputies are the only possible form of revolutionary government, and therefore our task can only be the patient, systematic, persistent explanation, adapted specifically to the practical needs of the masses, of the mistakes of their tactics. But opponents of a known sort present my views as a call to civil war in the midst of revolutionary democracy. I attacked the provisional government for the fact that it did not schedule an early time frame, or any in general, for the convocation of a constituent assembly, begging off with only promises. I demonstrated that, without the Soviets of workers' and soldiers' deputies, a convocation of the constituent assembly was not guaranteed, and its success is not possible. They ascribe to me the view that I am against a most rapid convocation of a constituent assembly. I would call these expressions delirious if decades of political struggle had not taught me to regard the good faith of opponents as a rare exception. Mr. Plekhanov called my speech delirious in his paper. Very well, Mr. Plekhanov, but look at how clumsy, awkward, and slow-witted you are in your own polemic. If I gave a delirious speech for 2 hours, how did hundreds of listeners suffer this delirium? Furthermore, why does your paper dedicate an entire column to the presentation of this delirium? You come across as inconsistent, entirely inconsistent. It is much easier, of course, to yell, to quarrel, to wail, than to attempt to recount, to explain, to remember how Marx and Engels reasoned in 1871, 1872, and 1875 about the experience of the Paris Commune, and about what kind of state the proletariat needs. The former Marxist Mr. Plekhanov likely does not want to remember Marxism. I cited the words of Rosa Luxemburg, who on the 4th of August, 1914, called German social democracy a, quote, stinking corpse. But the Plekhanovs, Goldenbergs, and the others take offense. On whose behalf? On behalf of the German chauvinists who have been called chauvinists. Confused are the poor Russian social chauvinists. Socialist in word, chauvinist indeed.